This is Melting Pot, and my name is Michael Barnes, and it is my distinct pleasure to welcome into the studio Dunyan. How are you guys doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
I'm also fine.
I'm actually really, really good.
I'm fine, too.
The first time I heard you guys was in 2007, and this is while I was still living in the Bay Area, and a friend of mine who is no longer with us, but a DJ by the name of Matthew Africa was playing one of the songs from Teo Bitar, Sivas Arvagen. And when I heard it, because Matthew was somebody who had really deep collection, so I heard it, and I was thinking, okay, well, that's one of those Matthew records that I'm never going to find. It's some obscure psychedelic record from the past. There's probably like three copies in existence or something like that, because that's how Matthew rolled. And then maybe a week later, I walked into Amoeba in Berkeley, and the same song was playing, and I was like, oh my god. And so I immediately went over and was like, what is this? And then it's like, here you go, this is the record. And it's like, oh, this is right now. It's like, I can see this band now. I can obsess about them in real time. And so pretty much I have from that period of time. It's a classic sound, but there's also so many elements that come in through the music that don't just link it to the past, but very much keep it centered in the now and kind of moving forward, which I think is something, as a fan, I've really been able to kind of notice coming in at that moment, because it seems like that was the moment kind of where this core kind of really got together as a core. And since then, the albums that have come out, it's been more of a band as opposed to, you know, primarily just the work of Gustav. I was wondering, though, if you could talk about, particularly Gustav, about how you originally put this band together and kind of what was going on in your mind with the kind of sounds that you wanted to create at the very early stages of Dunyan.
In the very early stages of Dunyan, I was basically recording mostly by myself, like overdubbing myself mm-hmm. with different instruments. Then I met Reine. And then we met Stefan Kerin, which has put out all the music through all these years. And me and Reine was start to play together, like recording my songs too. And I played the drums and bass, and he played, well, you play bass also sometimes, but it was only two of us kind of. And I remember Stefan and Reine were talking about, oh, especially Stefan was talking so much about, oh, you gotta play live. Gotta do this live. And I was like, no, that's not gonna happen. I don't know how that's gonna happen. And I was like obsessed by the thought that we had to, you know, there were no like musicians that look good, like look the proper way. I was like, I couldn't like imagine the scene where like how it looked when we played. So I was like, no, that's not gonna happen. We're gonna find a bass player, and who's gonna play the drums? No one can really play the drums. Then, obviously, we met, okay, Fredrik Björling, the first drummer. I'm not going to do a long story now, but I can try to. There was a guy, Fredrik Björling, who we went to school together. He joined. He played also on my songs a lot. And we joined. He joined, and then we were three. We were a power trio, like organ, guitar, and
bass. And drums.
Drums and bass and flutes and guitars. So we were three person.
Yeah.
We did like one show. I don't know. Then it had been like several different people, like the, I don't know, to mention everyone. But then Tias came in, like 2000, around when Tade Lugnt was released. Mm. He joined the band, and then after like 1 year, next Teo Bitar on that record is me playing the drums, Johan played the drums, and Fredrik played the drums. Yeah. There's three drummers on that record. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then Johan came along, and since then, we've been this group. And like you said, it's been very much, it's very obvious now when this new record, A La Sock, which is recorded us playing live. Mm. And if you compare that to the very first like recordings, or Tade Lugnt, mm-hmm. or Teo Bitar, it's more like me doing a lot of stuff, like and also like engineering and producing and do the whole shit, mix it. Uh-huh. So that's the very big difference.
Could you talk a little bit about, as we kind of get closer to talking about this new record, Talk a little bit about the experience of kind of the four of you coming together and really being a group, as opposed to, you know, just the way you were telling the story, Gustav, that, you know, everything kind of starts off as your brainchild, and you enlist Rena, and kind of there becomes a larger kind of crew together. But eventually, around the album four, it seems like things really start to come together. Mm-hmm. And since then, it seems like the distinctive sound of Dunyan really is around kind of these four members. I was wondering if you could talk about kind of that coming together as a band, and what that process has been like.
It's a
10-year-old story.
No, but now being on tour again for the first time in 5 years, like a proper tour, mm-hmm. it kind of makes me realize what touring does to you. And that's probably what has made the sound. I assume we've just been playing under crappy circumstances, playing under fantastic circumstances, and just like done all the mistakes. And then actually we have recorded a few times, like the whole band in the studio too. So I mean, it's been like, it hasn't been a conscious thing either. It's not, we actually talked about it last night, like what each and ours like image of what Dunyan is, mm-hmm. and what it should sound like. We probably have four different, we haven't really articulated like a vision of this music between us, but I suppose like all of us really have a clear vision of what it's supposed to be.
I think it works out also quite good, because even though we can like for instance, I maybe have a song or sound or a typical famous take that this is the one that I like, and others have, you know, and think about other stuff. So I think it's the music that we are thinking of is quite close. Mm. So this like sound wise, this period, mm-hmm. time in the music history. So I think that's why it comes together in the end, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the, I can't
but
say
it's also like I mean, from the very beginning, when I was afraid of bringing it live because of the perfectionist thing, mm. and I was afraid of how it should look like, but also of course how it should sound like, mm-hmm. and I was not afraid about Reine, because he's like, we've been together so much, or Fredrik, he played amazing drums, but mm-hmm. all the way from like how drums are sounding live, like when you don't have your own engineer, it could like be a total different thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it also has been from the beginning of like me writing these songs, there's always been this like and this verse chorus, and then in the end you gotta go away, like, and Reina has this expression, ta hus, like sets a fire,
set the house on fire.
Yeah.
Mm. If you
so
translate
this last part, because we love so much like music, talk about musicianship, but like when the human being is expressing himself through music improvised, that is something that I'm very interested of, and we all are very interested of, so that has always been a thing. Though on record, when I have been sitting with my laptop and like editing stuff, like that's the great part, but live you cannot do anything, it just happens, and it's so much built around that thing when we tour and play live.
Yeah,
I mean the songs are very important, that they are like correct. I sound like a freak, but but
like
then
James
it's
Brown.
Like, oh, that part, anything could happen.
Yeah.
So in terms of like getting this band, like you said, like from 2008, maybe this formula, we have definitely like built something together. Like, I don't know, I can't play that music with anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's such a strong connection that's clear. And clear from the recordings, and it's crystal clear when you perform, And it's, for me at least, and you know, having listened to tons of music over the years and watching a number of bands, it's kind of crazy to me that there wasn't kind of a conscious effort to bring a band together, but that it just kind of organically flowed into kind of what it's become. Though it also makes absolute sense, because for me, one of the things that I think is so incredible about the sound of Dunyan is how the sound kind of flows. In some instances, it doesn't happen often, but in some instances, I kind of hear and see music at the same time, and it kind of colors to music and kind of the way things sound. And that especially comes through in the music that you guys have performed from the band, and in some ways from the very beginning, but especially, you know, when it was, there's kind of a clear moment. I don't know if in listening to the recordings that you kind of hear that, but to me as a listener, there seems to be this kind of clear moment where y'all got it together. Mm-hmm. And from there, like the feeling is different, and kind of the way the music flows is different. The colors in some ways are more vivid now that the four of you have come together in this way. And it definitely comes through when you perform live. I mean, it almost, you know, just like I imagine quite a lot of jazz musicians when they're kind of with the right people and they just have that right feeling, whether they just met each other or they've known each other for years, like sometimes it just clicks.
Right.
And it's clear, very clear, it clicks with you guys.
Mm. When it clicks, it really clicks.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not clicking at all.
Sometimes but it's kicking in a different sense.
But I mean, I remember this, like certain like experiences that I've had with the music when we actually recorded stuff, like when we did
Setups here.
I convinced you to we have to record this. We have to do some overdubbing on En gång I år, kom det en tår. Mm. And we stayed up till like 6 in the morning, and we both got sort of obsessed with this song. And I was just, this is one of the best songs I ever recorded. Like, this music is, this is really strong stuff. Yeah. I mean, this is really something meaningful and beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean that happens all the time, I think.
Was this record the first where you guys went into the studio and recorded together all the songs?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have never done that before.
What was that experience like? It's a completely new experience.
Fun?
Yeah. I mean,
difficult at times, I think, because I'm so used to this laptop thing.
Mm.
You sit and tweak and you find the exact right sound, and you get inspired by the sound, and then you record.
Yeah.
Now it was more like, okay, do you got it? No. And okay, we have to record this now. Okay.
So more mistakes, but of course more like good mistakes, I guess. Mm. I'm pleased with it. I think Matthias also did an amazing job mixing the record, and I mean he's a wizard in engineering. He made like my visions become true in like 2 weeks when it took like a half a year for me to do like the same thing.
The thing with him, like his recording, like the way he operates is just like he sets the sound while we are in the studio just trying out our instruments basically. Mm. And then when he says like, are you ready? And we're like, okay. And then he press record, and then if we play bad, he kind of like stops mid-take and like, do it again, do it right. And then he press record, and then you go out in the control room and you listen to it, and the sound is already there.
Yes.
Yeah. He sets the sound before you even record it, and then it's on tape, and he just like mixes it in a day, and it just sounds so good.
Mm. It also pushes you, because a lot of the times he sets the like the levels and really good old style of in the headphones sound. So that can also something that really pushes me is like the 12 string super comprimerad. What is it? Super compressed 12 string steel string guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what's that. It's like and groove to that. It's like sounds like, I don't know, all like the end of the 60s. Yes. And the drums has to be really compressed. Really good. And that's that makes it easier because since I was a little child, I always played parts like in my own head. I'm a certain. I become characters. Mm-hmm. So when I hear that,
he's schizophrenic.
He's schizophrenic. So I get a bit like, wow. Now suddenly I'm in this like great studio in '68 or something.
Yeah,
that's how I think when I play.
Then you become Tommy Lee.
Nay, I don't want to become Tommy Lee.
Yeah, that you know, when I think about kind of connecting this band to the past and thinking of you know, like what kinds of sounds remind me of, and it's not that it's done, you know, with some bands that have a kind of a retro sound, like there's really very clear influences, and it turns out to be quite derivative, but here there are influences and kind of sounds that are brought in, but they all come out with your distinctive sound as opposed to somebody else's. But you know, that period of time where Earl Palmer and Carole Kay were recording with David Axelrod is certainly kind of one of the things that, you know, kind of comes through. Mm. Some
Carole
of the early
Kay is the best bass player of all time.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, early music from Khan, if there was some way for like David Axelrod to bring that crew in and like have a jam session with, you know, 72, 73 era Khan, like that gets close to kind of where sometimes you guys I feel like you are. But again, as something else, you know, your own thing.
I'd like to take a step back from the interview for a moment and play you music from Dunyan and their latest release, Alisak. This is the title track from that album that you're hearing right now on Melting Pot. We'll be right back. You've been listening to music from Dunyan, the title track from their latest release, Alice Sack. We now return back to our interview with the band right here on Melting Pot. In this record, you know, part of what the title more or less translates to is kind of everyone's thing.
Yeah.
And one of the quotes that I read from you in talking about the record, you know, and it was actually something we talked a little bit about earlier too, when you talked about how, you know, these songs come from kind of your experience and from your everyday experiences in this record in particular. However, there is kind of a kind of letting go in performance and in recording, where it becomes not just your music, but in some ways the audience's music. And I was wondering if you could talk about that that kind of theme as it relates to your music.
It's because I had a friend and another artist who said to me that it was like 10 years ago, and he said like, because I was no, that was like actually after we had been touring quite intense, and we took a break, and I was like, oh, I don't want to play live anymore. And he was like, oh, you have a responsibility to play your music for the people that wants it and needs it.
Who was that?
Tim Buck.
Oh.
And he was like, you have a responsibility. You can't, it's not only your music. As soon as you have write the song, as soon as you play it for someone else and they feel something, it's also their song. So I write songs and I give it, we play it together, and it's our it's our song, then we record it and you hear it, then it's also your music. Mm-hmm. It's for you. It's with the We couldn't do it
without you.
Especially live. When you, I mean, none of us are really like good comedians or like actors. I don't know. We like to play and we sit on stage and we do our thing. But I mean, I'm all like almost every time close my eyes because I can't like look at people because I get like embarrassed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I can feel them.
Yeah.
And I can feel their present if they're like into it or not. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, it's not very often you have a mosh pit at the shows even. Yeah. I mean, anyway, so it's like people standing close their eyes, but you can stand and close your eyes and be asleep and want to go home, or you can stand close your eyes and be like, I feel them.
I saw a lot of people in San Francisco who closed their eyes during and but they really liked it. You can tell it was more like a spiritual thing.
When those like occasions, when you really feel that present from the audience and everyone who's there like want it to happen, and then these improvised parts is like just taking shape and go somewhere. That's we all. I mean, you and everyone is there like doing it.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could go a little bit back in the past, just because, you know, as I mentioned, there's in some ways, you know, one song that I felt drawn to more than any other, and it was the first song that I heard from you, the instrumental Sie Visad Wagen.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit, just, this is in some ways just personally for me, just I wanted to always know more about that song, and particularly the, you know, just like where it comes from and kind of what was going through your mind when you recorded it.
The song is three parts. It's A, B, and then the long C in the middle. The song is a dedication to a person who has an initial C, and which that person showed me the way. C shows the way. That's the title. And
Way or path?
Path. Then there was like the first weekend we hung out at my place in, at my mom's place in south of Sweden where I recorded mostly back then. And we took the bus down and we recorded that song. And you had this idea about the brushes, the brush beat.
Yes, I don't know why, but.
And my mom, she's a co-producer. She used to be a co-producer because there was a big farm and I had this house and she was like, hanging around at home, and Reine was there. Okay, when we did the brush beat, she had like, I mean, later same day, like, oh, I like that drum beat on that song. That is so amazing, really, really good. And that was all she could hear. Obviously, we were sitting in headphones.
Yeah.
But then another time, we were like doing, me and Reina had this crazy shit, like me playing the drums really loud and he was like doing electric guitar. Uh-huh. And we were, this was for Tio Bita, like a long jam, and afterwards we were really got out on the, like, what's your name?
Porsche.
And mom was like standing in the other house, like 50 meters away. No, but like hanging through the balcony, and was like, oh, that solo, Reina, oh, you are amazing. Reina, you're my god. It was like feedback. She's an old Hendrix.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's so funny. She's so nice.
She's incredibly amazing.
So she's really been co-producing.
Yeah, and provide us with amazing good food and wine during. No, it's ridiculous.
Okay, but that song, Se Visa Vägen, what I'm like most, what I really like about that recording is the strings. And I had a period when I really like practiced a lot of violin, so it actually sounds pretty decent.
Yeah, yeah.
The violins is like the overdubbing.
Sounds really good.
I'm glad you like it.
And it's not to say that I don't like, you know, most every song that I've heard from the group, but that song, for whatever reason, just really, really gets me.
Wow.
And it is, you know, I've always wondered kind of a little bit behind it, and it is fascinating to me that it is kind of a song that's kind of a dedication and to somebody who kind of, you know, helped you kind of get on the path, or the right path in some ways. It also reminds me another question in thinking about the kind of progression from the beginning up to this moment. There does seem to be kind of a different emotional quality to a lot of the music, and I don't know if I would necessarily say that some of the stuff, like just before Tio Bitar and kind of that album, and then less so with Four and Skeeted Alt and Alasak. Prior to that, it seemed to be some like almost like periodic moments of almost like anger in some ways, and there seems to be much more of a kind of mellowing throughout the last several. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how emotions in some ways come through in the music and the songwriting, not just in the performance, but also in kind of the conception of the songs.
My girlfriend, she was complaining over like, oh, there's no edge anymore, like when we play. Like you have nice shirts on. And you're like
getting old and comfortable.
Like no one want to play hard rock anymore. Like you just play like jazz tunes. And I was like, okay, but. The thing is, for me, in life in general, I mean, you have to have the anger and happiness. Mm-hmm. And I think, okay, maybe like the earlier recordings, especially Todd Lund, I was pretty angry. Mm-hmm. And we like made each other angry to like make the music so angry it could be, partly. But
yeah.
But I think, I mean, you still get angry. I'm angry. No, I often get angry. No,
yeah,
but musically, get like angry music. I think we did it on like, I think we have it like on stage. We try to like not get angry, but we like when it's supposed to be that kind of mode. It's
Tahus
again. Yeah,
And then
it's like
on fire.
Going all the way down to like almost quiet, and then like.
Yeah, anger. It seems like the easiest way to describe the kind of split that
rage
seems there.
Or like,
but there's more. The intensity is different.
Yeah, now. For sure.
And it's maybe that's what it is. You know, it's kind of like there's an ability. It seems like in the music to have a kind of intense emotional quality, but without maybe the kind of negative elements in some ways of that intensity. It's like it's not you know, like mellow in terms of, you know, like it just mellows you out. Mm. And some of it maybe does, but there is this exceptional intensity. I feel like to the music that you guys perform and that you record, and this incredible emotional quality. Maybe some of it, you know, relates to the fact that, you know, I don't speak Swedish, and all the lyrics are in Swedish, and so I have to kind of relate to the music in a slightly different way, mm-hmm. or I'm, you know, kind of forced to do the extra work of translating the lyrics and trying to fit that into my conception. I'm not sure if that's it. I don't think that is necessarily it, but it does seem, and it seems kind of backed up by some of the things that we've been talking about, this just intense feeling that comes through in terms of how you clearly deeply care about this music and the way that it sounds and the way that it is received by others, and the kind of camaraderie that comes from the playing that you guys have, that same kind of emotion, it just comes through so clearly. And you know, it was just one of the many things that, you know, given this chance to have a conversation with you, I just wanted to highlight and kind of dig into your brain a little bit, but more than anything, just kind of tell you how much appreciate that as a listener, to have that come through in the music. It really is extraordinary.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
It's a huge compliment.
Yeah.
I'm actually the happiest guy in the band, I think.
Yeah.
I think so. I don't get very, very angry mm-hmm. often.
I often get very frustrated.
There's also
I'm not the happiest, but but I don't get angry so often.
But I remember when, I mean, it happens every once in a while when we play live too, but when we recorded stuff,
once in a
it's
while.
Like you say to oh, but you always play better when you're angry and frustrated. Like, we should keep like the first take when you didn't know what you were doing. Like,
yeah.
And often it's like,
but it's like
it's right.
What Reina has taught me, or like even, I mean, in the 90s when I was a teenager and there was a big thing around the hip hop in Sweden in a small city outside. The desert kind of it was I don't know what we had Woods. Records and what we were very me and the other guy, the only guy in the whole city who was listening to hip hop, but we were like, keep it real,
yeah,
you gotta be real. and it's like some kind of similarity to you always says det på riktigt. It's for real. It's,
it's for real.
When music is for real, you can really tell when it's for real. I mean, emotionally, it's.
Haven't you seen the sketch when keeping it real goes wrong?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that is, you know, when I think about most of the music that I listen to, or that I have to listen to,
it's keeping real.
To kind of is it good or is it not? You know, a lot of it, unfortunately, is. When it goes wrong, which I think also makes me appreciate the moments when it goes right even more so.
Of course, that's I mean, of course, that's every songwriter and artist's and the musician's ambition, of course, to make it real. Mm-hmm. But
so
when
much
you
edge
like
out
you have these expressions like knife to your throat or nosebleed or like
you have those kind of. Has to be more nosebleed.
Yeah.
This is a nosebleed take, okay?
Yeah, and then you want like, oh, so Reina, is this like a grove? No. This is a field.
You're making fun of me now.
No,
it's not. We left with you. Not.
It's the emotional.
It's a funny thing that happened in the beginning like when we started to know each other.
Is this like a little village? No. That's.
This is a huge city.
just beside a sea, it's like a little kiosk where you can buy like. I mean,
that's
nice.
How we
nice.
Talk when we want to capture this feeling.
Yeah.
So I think the first is this like woods, Rain? Is this the woody sound? Like, no, actually, we had the eng.
Meadow.
What?
Meadow.
No, it's meadow. You want? Wow. And it was really serious. Like it's actually meadow. It was nothing like he was joking. Okay. That's so funny.
Jesus Christ. No, but I mean that's a great thing when you can sort of put pictures in your head.
Yeah. It's really good.
It really makes you like see something.
Yeah. And it absolutely flows through the music.
I mean, there is a lot of music that is just convenient, like it's proper. but it hasn't, like, I suppose, edge or
an extra
meadow or nosebleed.
Less meadow.
And it can be different, of course, from, I mean, you grew up here. You haven't seen things that we have at home, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, for example, for me, the Sevisa Vägen part, the finger picking part with like the upfading tambourine, that's meadow. For me, that's meadow.
But what is it truly then?
No, some kind of meadow.
Sauna. I'm just kidding.
Slight meadow.
Maybe with some wet dog.
Morning dew.
What do you say, compost?
Oh, the smell of the compost.
You're going to have to come out with very, very different liner notes for an album.
Oh, the smell of the utedass. The smell of the, what's it called?
Port-a-potty. No, more like the In-N-Out burger. No. All right. Environment. All right.
Yes. A heavy week of In-N-Out burger.
It is. It really has been special to spend this time with you, and to kind of get a window into how you guys create music and how you perform and to hear some of the stories as well. And you know, once again, just I cannot thank you, all of you, enough for coming in and doing this. You know, this particular time around was a lot different than the kind of things we normally have done in the past, and you know, it was a bit of a hassle in a lot of different ways, but you know, it really is you know, one of the best experiences I've had as a DJ, and having this actually happen, you know, here and now I can say at the end it's actually happened. So
I'm overwhelmed from your words. I mean,
and I appreciate it so much. I mean, wow. But the music is yours. That's all we can say, I guess. It's for you.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here now is music from Dunyan, a set of some of my favorite songs from the band, beginning with music from their latest release, Alasak. The song is En Gång Om Året, and you're hearing it now on Melting Pot. Thank you.
som du behöver för att få lite tid. Det var likadant den första gången som idag var jag vid. Jag har förstört något som jag gillar väldigt mycket. Jag tyckte något annat fast man glömmer ganska fort. Om du tar för dig låt den smaka fast försiktigt. Minns hur det blev efter sist. Oh.